Coming up on the Social Hour, Facebook has beefed up its patent portfolio and also added listen buttons. Tumblr's going ad-based, even though they said that they wouldn't. A new app called Dabbles for location-based tips. Haven't I heard that before? And the Olympics is not very social-friendly. All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 57, recorded Monday, April 23rd, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator and save $50 on your device purchase at Ting.com/Social Hour. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from South Florida. Hey, Sarah.
Hello. I like the background in your South Florida version of the Skype apartment. It's very...
Yes.
We got like flamingos on that lamp behind you or something kind of islandy.
Yes, you know what? It definitely is South Florida. So we bought a place here last spring, a condo, and they left some stuff in the condo. So some furniture and some lamps. Clearly, I did not go out and buy that lamp. However, it kind of works down here, Sarah, I have to say.
Yes.
We had great weather in Toronto over the past few weeks, but I heard they had snow, I think, recently. So I'm happy that I'm down here.
I was in Idaho at the end of last week. And it was, everyone who lives there was like, you're really coming here at a nice time. In April, it's never this warm. But there was definitely snow on the mountains. And I thought, well, you know, it wasn't that warm. So I thought, I guess I got lucky. It could have been a lot colder this time of year.
Beautiful. I've never been there. Is it nice?
Yes, it is. I had never been to anywhere in Idaho. It was my first time in the state, which is always kind of exciting for me because I like to, you know, eventually have visited all 50 states. And it was great. It's small. Idaho Falls is where I was. I was doing a talk on social media to a group of, mostly women. There were some men in the audience, but it was the National Federation of Press Women, who do an annual get together in Idaho Falls of all places. And it was really fun. It's a small town, nice people, good food, and I had a really good time.
Very cool. How did the talk go? Because I think you were kind of nervous at one point about it, if I remember correctly.
I was a little nervous, yeah, because, we spend so much time doing our shows here at Twit, but it's not that often that I'm actually giving a talk in front of a lot of people. Amber, you're much more used to that than I am. So I thought, once I get going, I'm okay. But sometimes I'm just nervous at the very beginning. And it was also like a 3-hour talk. So I thought, gosh, what am I going to talk about for 3 hours? But then I thought, you know, you're overthinking this. You're going to give a presentation on social media, and that's very interactive. So right away I said, you know, just start raising your hand if you've got questions. The room was small enough that people could kind of yell out their questions, and we could just it sort of drove the conversation organically. So it was easy. It went by like that.
Awesome. And you know what, isn't it the best feeling? And I know a lot more people these days are doing public speaking, but it is the best feeling when you're done.
Yes.
your event, and you do have that adrenaline, that kind of buzz, right?
Yeah. It's a good time. Good time. I see JP2E is in chat. That was Jennifer. She was at the talk. It was really nice to meet her. Hi again. New friends. It's always fun, even in Idaho. So, Amber, let's get right into some of the stories coming down the social wire this week. First story I just added to our lineup this morning because I read it right before I left the house. Microsoft and Facebook announcing a $550 million patent deal. What does that mean for us? Well, Facebook is in their quiet period for just a little longer now. They're expected to IPO May 17th, I think, is the going date at this point. Yahoo is in the middle of using their patents against Facebook, presumably to get quite a bit of money out of Facebook. Yahoo has a big patent portfolio, and Facebook's, by comparison, is pretty small. And obviously, at some point, you know, even if it's a defensive measure, companies need to have patent portfolios that, you know, they can bring to court and have a fighting chance. You know, whether or not Yahoo's, you know, a lot of people say, it's not very ethical of Yahoo to be going after Facebook just because they're about to go IPO. Yahoo had actually done this with Google some years ago and got some money out of Google right before its IPO. But Microsoft has a lot of patents, a huge patent portfolio, and it turns out that some of those patents that they bought from AOL, they are able to license to other companies, and it looks like Facebook's taking advantage of this.
Yeah, just based on reading the article, so they'll now have access to more than 600 patents. You know, Sarah, the first thing that goes through my mind when I'm reading this is I'm really happy that I'm not a lawyer, a patent lawyer especially, because I can't imagine the amount of detail that goes into some of these patents and all of the fine print as well. So Facebook seems to be doing so much just getting ready for the IPO, and this is just, a natural progression, especially like you mentioned, because of the Yahoo situation not that long ago.
Yeah, it's not a surprise. It's interesting to see these. We have a segment on Tech News Today for anybody who watches that show called Patent Wars, because it's really how it feels a lot of the time. It's like patent warfare, you know, throwing, I've got this patent, now you pay me. And it usually ends up being some sort of a licensing deal, which really on paper ends up looking like companies are throwing money back and forth. Okay, you have to pay me however many millions of dollars so that we stop suing you. And you know, it keeps companies afloat in many cases, even when it doesn't seem like they're actually innovating a whole lot. Mm-hmm. But
I don't know if you watch the show Shark Tank, but I'm a big fan. It's on Friday nights, and I'm usually home, I'm embarrassed to say. Mm-hmm. But Scott from Scotty Vest was on a few months ago, and he had this big fight with Mark Cuban about patents, because obviously Scott has a bunch of different patents for his clothing that has, you know, great places to put all your electronics and the wiring and everything. But I urge people to go and dig it up online if you want to hear more about patents from both sides of the equation. Really interesting. We'll say kind of a fight that they had.
Yeah, it's patents. People get very heated about that sort of thing. And yeah, you can talk about them all day long, because there are truly a lot of, whether it's copyright infringement or internet property. I mean, it's a big legal mess. And Facebook is not immune. Although Facebook is innovating. In fact, they are getting into something that's a little bit more integrated with music on Facebook, something that Facebook has already been doing with third-party apps like Spotify or RDO or Moog, for example. But now there is a new feature. If you go to a musical artist's page, I have added Madonna here, which is facebook.com/Madonna. So obviously very popular. A lot of people like Madonna. And there, you know, I can look and see who of my friends are connected to Madonna. Obviously, whoever is managing her page, who knows, it's her, but probably not her, is adding quotes and everything. But now there is a new feature called Listen. So I can go ahead and like Madonna. I'm not going to do that, because Madonna's actually not my favorite artist in the world. But if I want to listen, and I hit Listen here, it kicks me into a little dialogue box. It says, RDO needs to be open for you to play Madonna. Facebook is smart enough to know that I already have my RDO app connected to Facebook. However, if I wanted to play in either Moog or Spotify, I could toggle those, which is kind of nice that it's allowing me to, you know, to choose my app. And then if I say open RDO, it'll go ahead and open RDO in another tab. So it's not actually within Facebook, but pretty easy enough. I am a RDO member, so it'll just go ahead and open my account. If I wasn't an RDO member, I would be prompted to join. But at this point, RDO opens, and then Madonna starts playing. I can't choose exactly what Madonna song is going to start playing. This looks like Everybody, the remix album version. So somewhat random. It's not Madonna's new album, which is what I would have thought it would be. But it is a nice, easy way, if you're unfamiliar with an artist, or maybe you haven't heard their music in a while or something, and you come across their page on Facebook, to quickly listen to some of their greatest hits.
I really like this. I mean, it reminds me, of the old school days at MySpace. I wonder if this is kind of the final nail in the MySpace coffin, right? You know, if I had to think of one reason you would ever want to continue to go to MySpace, I would think it would be for music, because there still are a lot of artists that are going there. But I think this will really mix things up. Interesting in this TechCrunch article, Sarah, when they mention how some third-party developers aren't that happy about this, because if they do make music streaming apps within the Facebook environment, they may not be at the top of the list. You know, like you said, it may kind of default or push you towards one of the bigger apps like RDO.
Yeah, in fact, the TechCrunch article mentions a few apps. One of them is called BandPage, and I am not a BandPage user, but from what I can tell here by looking at it, it is the way that, yeah, it would be an app that I would use to get a little bit more out of an artist page. The problem with third-party apps, though, is because of the way that Facebook has been redesigned, apps are kind of hidden, which makes the whole experience seem a lot cleaner. But if you are an app that provides some sort of streaming music service on top of the Facebook platform, and I have to click into an apps tab to get there, and Facebook just has a nice listen tab right on the front, I'm not very inclined to use BandPage, unless I thought the experience was just a lot better. But as far as people just discovering third-party apps, Facebook is clearly directly competing with them. I would be, my feathers would be a little bit ruffled if I was running the BandPage app.
I think it's neat, too, though, when they talk about how this could be used for other things, like a TV show or a movie where you could just click, for instance, watch instead of listen. And just that idea that Facebook is continuously evolving and, thinking of new ways, clearly, to attract advertisers, musicians, whatever it might be. So I think this, you know, like some Facebook changes I don't necessarily love, but I think this makes perfect sense for the platform.
Yeah, I think so, too. And you can't help but make comparisons to MySpace, because MySpace on the music side is one of the things that I think people can agree they have done well, as Facebook pretty much crushed them in all other social arenas. But Facebook is, they have amazing retention numbers as far as the amount of time that people spend on Facebook. And I mean, I pretty much always have a tab open that's just Facebook, because I'm in there so often. And the more connected I can be musically, especially if I just sort of have a pervasive connection open all the time, the better, really. And I'm not really going to Facebook that much now to discover artist information. But especially with musical artists, I might be more inclined to do that if I thought that there was a tighter integration, especially with, you know, a social music service that I'm already using.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the one question, though, about Facebook, sorry, I don't want to sidetrack us too much, is the issue with commenting. And I imagine that a lot of artists are going to have this, too. I just feel as though, you know, at least with the subscription button on Facebook, you know, my comments, I know friends and family, they don't necessarily want to comment on anything that I post anymore, because the comments, just many of them just don't make sense. Yeah. So they're very spam-like. So I hope that Facebook maybe devotes some time and effort there. I don't know what can be done, but I can imagine, you know, in the context of artists, that if you're an artist and you put up a page and there's just so many people kind of coming there, that the comments get out of control pretty quickly there.
Well, I know on profile pages, so that's different, obviously, than an artist page. On my profile page, and I have the same problem that you do, Amber, where there's just, it's like a lot of nonsensical. Some is spam and some is just lost in translation somehow, but it certainly isn't adding to the conversation in a comment thread. You can dial down your settings so that only friends can comment, or friends of friends, which definitely takes it down a notch from public. What I have found, though, is, and that definitely cleans up comments. You'll just see a lot fewer of them. But then I get a lot more people who are trying to add me as a friend, because they're seeing a dialogue box that says you're not this person's friend in order to comment, type of thing. And that's, you know, I've for years now really tried to get away from friending strangers on Facebook. It just does not work for my experience. So yeah, it's a bit of a double-edged sword there.
Yeah, it's not ideal. All right, Sarah, so we have some more news about Instagram. Is this like sort of a positive and a negative Instagram investment story?
Yeah, it is. So a little bit of background. Well, okay, so just in case you haven't been around for the last 2 weeks, Instagram was bought by Facebook for $1 billion. Now, that is a huge acquisition. It's very exciting for Instagram's small team, and it has prompted a lot of internet chatter about whether or not $1 billion is too much, whether or not the community as we know it is doomed because Facebook as a large company has gobbled it up and will ruin it somehow. I mean, it is a very, very interesting story. And then you get into the nuts and bolts of, well, who invested in Instagram and who's making the most money? $1 billion isn't just, you know, going to one person. It's split up depending on how the company was set up in the early days. And the New York Times, among others, but this one in particular, had an article, I think it was last week, that the title was How Andreessen Horowitz Bunted on an Instagram Investment. Very, what's interesting too, and this is totally random, is it originally wasn't bunted, it was fumbled. And I suspect that they changed the word fumbled to bunted because it's baseball season rather than football season right now, which is really random. But that article used to say fumbled, and they changed their verb. So that's just what
happened.
That's
hilarious.
So, and the article goes on to explain. Andreessen Horowitz, by the way, is a venture capital firm. They're in the business of giving small companies who have great ideas but need money. Money so that they can realize their dreams. And when they sell to companies like Facebook, then companies like Andreessen Horowitz, who have a percentage of the company, end up, hopefully if all goes well, making huge returns on their investment. So that's who that is. And the story goes on to explain that Andreessen Horowitz had invested in Instagram when it was still Bourbon, which was their first company idea before they had pivoted into a photo sharing service. But then they had also invested in an app, a company called Pick Please, which a lot of people in the Android community knew of because Instagram wasn't available for Android, although it worked on iOS as well. And they were competitors. So, and it's, you know, it gets into kind of a complicated money back and forth situation. But it came down to the fact that Andreessen Horowitz said, well, we had invested a small amount of money into Bourbon, and we've invested a certain amount of money into Pick Please, and now that you're Instagram, we can't give you any more money because you guys are kind of competitors, and it just doesn't. We don't feel right about that, and So a lot of people said, "Boy, you know, even though these guys made close to $100 million on a $250,000 investment, they really should have given them more money. They'd be so much richer now." Ben Horowitz of Andreessen Horowitz, on his personal blog, bhorowitz.com, wrote a really interesting, I mean, this is, talk about inside baseball. This is the sort of stuff that I struggle sometimes to understand all the complexities of how venture capital works. Amber, I don't know how much you follow this sort of stuff, but, you know, it can be very complicated. And him saying, listen, we have very clear reasons for why we don't think it's right to give two competitors, you know, same amount of money because we wouldn't want them to be. It's sort of just it creates bad blood because you'd be sort of betting on one of them to fail, and that's not really the point of, I guess, how good investors are supposed to approach things. Did you read his blog?
Yeah, I'm just looking at it right now. I read it before we started as well. And I think it's great that he actually posted, pretty lengthy blog post on this topic. And it really goes to show you where a blog becomes particularly helpful, especially if you're someone like him, in the sense that many people have their feedback and comments about this exact issue and things that they want to say. But in terms of trying to set the record straight for yourself, I feel like he does a pretty good job of that.
I do too. And it's really nice to have somebody not only setting the record straight, but being really candid about it. These are the sorts of deals that often we're all reading articles and speculating on what happened because you don't really know. So it's very interesting read. We will have it in our show notes if you're interested in knowing more about the Instagram story, if you're not following along that closely. But yeah, it's sort of the story that won't end. People, I think, are still shocked by that price tag. The $1 billion just... It's
ridiculous
for people to get past. And hey, these a lot of people made a lot of money off of this, that the Instagram founders included, which I really think is well deserved. It's a great app, great small team. You know, they kind of had a ragtag crew and put something together that has totally changed the way that people share photos. So,
yeah. I mean, I think I totally agree. I mean, the app is fantastic. They've done such a great job. I still cannot believe the $1 billion price tag, though. And I honestly, just as both of us have watched tech trends over the years, I can't envision that, you know, Instagram is going to have sort of a long-term strategy in the sense that they'll be around, you know, we'll be talking about them a few years down the road. I just don't see it. And then from that perspective, I think $1 billion, it's just, it's hard to just fathom that amount of money. It's so inflated. I think the big thing for me when this all happened was I cannot forget the one line I read that Instagram is now worth more than the New York Times. And that just seems shockingly wrong in some ways.
Yeah. Yes. Or very indicative of the times and changing and what we consider a valuable property these days. So yes, that is the never-ending Instagram saga. Now it's personal. So again, we'll have those links in our show notes if you want to brush up on your VC knowledge and learn a little bit more about what goes on deals with these apps and the money that gets exchanged. Quick reminder to anybody who might not be watching us live, we record the show on Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. So if you ever miss any of our shows or you want to go back and reread something or find those show notes that I'm always talking about, you just go to twit.tv/TSH. You see all of our episodes. If you click into an episode page, we've got embedded video right there for you. So you can just, that's me and Ayaz last week when Amber was taking the week off. It was a fun show. It's not often, Amber, that I have somebody actually sitting next to me on the social hour.
Distracting, isn't it, Sarah?
Yeah, it was kind of odd. Even when Leo and I sit on the same set when we do iPad Today, but I'm usually in the other chair. So the whole thing was a bizarro world, but it was a lot of fun. But that's our website. And we also have handy dandy subscription links over on the left-hand side, right under my and Amber's photo there, illustrated photo. And that's how you can subscribe to the show. You guys know what I'm talking about, but I always feel like it's worth repeating in case we've got new viewers or listeners, audio feeds and video feeds too. So maybe you can't watch the show, but if you can listen, we try to make that as easy for you as possible. Okay, we've got some news, we've got some tips, we've got some an app spotlight, but first, let's take a moment to thank Ting for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. And before I even get into why Ting is cool, Amber, you actually have a phone using a Ting account as of today.
Yeah, so I'm down in Florida, and as anyone knows, if you're Canadian or from somewhere outside the U.S., roaming charges can be absolutely astronomical. So what I did before I left is I have a phone. It's a Motorola Photon, so an Android phone. I signed up for the Ting service. I just activated it today, and it's fantastic. I mean, the thing that I like the most about it is going on to the Ting site. Once you sign up for the service, you actually get to choose your plan. You choose your plan, really simple. You know, it's different sizing, like extra small, small, medium, large, and extra, extra large. So again, it's just the simplicity. So you choose one of these plans. And if you go over that, all it does is Ting automatically ups your plan. So instead of charging you these insane rates like many of the telcos do, it will allow you to then just go to the next plan. And in the long run, you'll be saving money. So really simple to sign up. I had one little glitch with my phone that was my fault. I was trying to figure out. I went and got in touch with Ting through Twitter and emailed their customer service. And within literally seconds, they got back to me and were able to help me out. So again, Ting, they also, the company behind Ting also does Hover, and they are really top notch on customer service. So super excited to actually have a phone plan, Sarah, that I can go in and manage myself. I mean, this is kind of a unique in this day and age to be able to have that much control over the plan that you have in place. And I think Ting has the best service plan and customer service that I've seen out there.
You heard it here. Amber's using it and she loves it. It does make sense. If you use less, either megabytes, minutes, text messages, than you think you will, you're automatically credited the difference at the end of the month. As Amber mentioned, if you use more, you're automatically billed for that additional amount. But you don't have to, you know, you can use it a lot more realistically month to month rather than buying a big, big plan because every once in a while on a month, you end up using a lot of data. So it just makes a lot more sense because we've got complicated lives and we're on our devices all of the time. And some months are different than others. So Ting has a really, really good approach to all of this, which really makes me wonder if this isn't the way that everyone will have to go eventually. Also, Ting lets you purchase phones right from the website. Prices range from about $100 to up into the $500 range. Several models to choose from: Motorola Photon, HTC Detail, Samsung Transform, LG Optimus, just to name a few. So you can save money because if you go to ting.com/social hour, that's our little code, you can save $50 off of one of those device purchases. $50, yeah. So, you know, $100 phone, you get $50 off. All of a sudden, that is a very attractive price. So if you're interested in a Ting account, it looks good to you, definitely go to ting.com. And certainly if you're going to buy a device, or even if you're not, ting.com/social hour, so they know you came from us. It is absolutely the best way to have a mobile plan in this day and age. So thanks to Ting. All right, moving on to the Olympics. Who else loves the Olympics?
I love the Olympics, Sarah.
I do too.
They are so awesome, but I do not love this story. It is kind of disturbing, I think, because I think of the world that we live in today where people are sharing so much content, and it appears as though the branding police at the Olympics coming up in London are trying to clamp down on things.
Yeah, the Olympics are, it's one of those events, you know, it happens. It's a big deal, obviously. Everyone knows what the Olympics is, but you can't say things like, you know, enjoy the Olympics 2012 with Pepsi, you know, unless Pepsi is actually an official sponsor, and they are really stringent about that. No, of course, it's not just the Olympics, you know, soccer games and Super Bowl and their, you know, big events, Oscars, that are also that really clamp down on anybody that may be trying to capitalize by being associated with a brand without paying. However, because social media is out there, and certainly in 2012, more than it was the last time the Olympics came around, it starts to get into some gray areas. Because what if I buy a ticket, I'm watching the floor routine, you know, watching the American team in gymnastics, and I take some video and I upload it to my Facebook page? Well, I can't really do that. But am I going to be found out by these branding police? And if so, then what happens? Because I'm not technically allowed to do that. Even if I'm not capitalizing on it, I'm not allowed to show any kind of footage, photos, videos. And the athletes that are participating in the Olympics, it's even weirder. I mean, they can't tweet about a company that's not sponsoring the Olympics. They can't upload photos and videos either, even in, you know, they're in the Olympic Village. It's, you know, it's very exciting, that sort of thing. So it really, it tends to read as if, boy, I mean, the Olympics are really trying to spoil everyone's fun. But again, this is a money thing, isn't it?
It's all about money, Sarah. I know when you read this paragraph about how they're trying to clamp down on the different athletes, and they talk about their social media and blogging policy that they have in place, and there's a certain span from July 18th to August 15th where many of these advertising rules come into place for the athletes, banning all non-sponsor endorsements. I have to wonder, though, for some of these athletes who are already working with existing sponsors, there must be conflicts all over the place. I mean, many of these athletes would have contracts that where they're maybe they promote companies. It could be a, you know, an energy drink company or a clothing sponsor. And it appears that this will cause some problems for them. So it reminds me a little bit, Sarah, when we went into the early days of social media and many companies tried to start banning their employees from talking about the company. And it just doesn't seem like, again, this is a really good approach and something that's going to be able to be maintained. There's going to be violations all over the place.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting is there would be some companies that would try to get around these rules. Of course, especially, you know, economically, but, you know, millions of people are coming into town, London in this case, to participate in the Olympics in some way. And if you're a small business, let's say, within a few miles of one of the Olympic stadiums, you certainly want to capitalize on all of this traffic. But you have to be careful about how you do that in order to not be fined or get in trouble. I mean, it's a criminal offense. There are laws that have actually been written on top of British law in order to cover the Olympics in this way. But then there is also the chance that a company is in no way trying to sort of game the system. And that's where I don't really like the story, because I think, well, you know, I mean, please. It's the Olympics, right? And it's a little bit silly, I guess, to think that there's actually a branding police going in and making sure that logos are removed from bathrooms and nice citizens who are just excited about that gymnastics floor routine or not posting photos to the Facebook accounts. Or I guess if I did, I would just have to make sure it was to some sort of closed list, you know, where I knew that nobody would tell on me or something.
I feel like it goes against the entire spirit of the Olympics. You know, if we think about the Olympics, really, historically, they've been this amazing event that brings people together, athletes from all over the world, and it really, truly is a community event. Now, social media kind of paired with the Olympics, it's a beautiful combination that allows people to continue to share, and then all of a sudden, you have these really stringent rules coming into place, and it just, you know, leaves sort of a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah, it definitely does. But again, they want us to watch the Olympics on TV and on their
not on Twitter
official streams, yes, internet streams, and they want to control the social experience. It will be interesting to see how effective they can do that, because of course they, you know, there's just you can't even police Twitter. It's like it will it'll get away from them, but they are doing their darndest. Tumblr, meanwhile, is going to start selling ad units come May 2nd. What do you think about this, Amber?
You know, I don't think it's really a surprise in the sense that, you know, they need to figure out a way to continue to monetize the service or start to monetize the service in a significant way. I guess the only thing is when you look into what the Tumblr CEO and founder, David Karp, has said, historically, he's kind of been opposed to advertising. So I guess maybe a great opportunity has come their way, and they realize they need to do something to step up and start to sell ads. So we're seeing this everywhere, Sarah. I mean, it's just it's all about the money, Sarah. That's what this is, the whole episode of the Social Hour today. It's all about money.
Yeah. For once, companies are motivated by money. Yeah, it sounds like on Tumblr Radar page, I'll try to pull it up here. Radar is, well, is it radar.tumblr.com? Maybe, probably. This is one of the pages that Tumblr has put together. Well, anyway, I'm not logged in, so it's giving me a password prompt. Tumblr has put together to help you find cool blogs on the Tumblr platform. So it's Tumblr Radar, and it's everything from, you know, interesting people who might have things in common with you, or they are prolific writers, and so on and so forth. And that sounds like where ad units are going to be seen. And they promise advertisers that, I think it's something like 140 million, page views to Tumblr Radar every day. So obviously would be potentially a very lucrative place to get your ad seen. But I think, yeah, David Karp said fairly recently in the last couple of months that ads were a last resort for them. They were, you know, they didn't want ads anywhere on the platform, which is something that I've always enjoyed about Tumblr. You know, it's nice and clean. You can put ad units on your individual blog, but it's not as if you would see them in the dashboard experience. And anyone who uses Tumblr, can probably agree it's pretty nice. But I guess nothing lasts forever. Even if you don't like ads, eventually you're going to have to let them in, because, you know, unless you have another creative ideas for revenue streams.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen Facebook kind of open the floodgates here, right? So they've made it okay to advertise against everything that you like and now potentially listen to. And so I think other companies are probably feeling pressure to kind of step up. They see the kind of money that Facebook has or the potential they have to make even more money in the future. And, you know, if you look at this article and Karp mentions that on one day only, they had 122,302 users sign up on Tumblr. I mean, just an amazing opportunity for advertising. Will it turn off the community on Tumblr? Probably. It's probably going to turn some people off, just like advertising does in general, or anytime anyone has, you know, there's a perceived kind of sellout. But I'm sure people will still stick around, and hopefully they do a great job of integrating the ads, and it's not too kind of intrusive to the experience on Tumblr.
Yes. Very much agreed. We will have to see. Again, May 2nd, it's coming right up. Foursquare, this article, it got my attention because the headline read, Foursquare goes Hollywood, gets an agent. And my initial reaction is,
so weird.
How does Foursquare have an agent? It's a company, and it's a mobile app, really, at that. But it sounds like it's not that bad of an idea, because Foursquare could be really huge in sort of the Hollywood community and having a little bit more crossover with television shows, let's say, or certain Hollywood type events where you would check in on Foursquare and, you know, get some sort of a prize. Foursquare works with a lot of brands as well. That's certainly how they've got money coming in. So I guess when you want to go big time down in Tinseltown, you sign with an agency.
Yeah, you know, I guess I don't get the part, you know, when you're reading this article and it talks about how Foursquare, they're also interested in the social television play. And I think of Foursquare and I think of it as being so location oriented. And are they trying to compete with services out there like GetGlue that does a great job, I think, with entertainment type content? Mm-hmm. So that piece of it to me seems a little bizarre. I get trying to, you know, capture the Los Angeles audience and try to get maybe celebrities and musicians and artists who are there to start using Foursquare. But the social TV part of it, I'm not sure I quite get, Sarah. What about you?
Well, Foursquare is one of those companies that seems to have done a lot of experimenting, and they're pretty good at introducing a feature, and if it's not widely adopted or somehow somewhat complicated or doesn't seem to be working, they're kind of good about just getting rid of it without there being a big confusion or to do, because Foursquare is a really, really popular service. It's a very popular app, millions of users, and they've got Foursquare. It's actually called Radar as well. Their Radar feature, for example, is this feature where if you turn it on, you can get push notifications from Foursquare to tell you, oh, you're walking down the street, you're near this cool coffee shop that, you know, some of your friends have enjoyed, you might want to get a latte, that sort of thing. So it's based on where people you've connected to have been, tips that they've left, specials that might be nearby, that sort of thing. But it's the sort of feature that a lot of people don't even know about, because Foursquare feels like they still have a little bit more work to do. I know it's because I was listening to a talk that Dennis Crowley gave recently about this particular feature. But it doesn't really change the experience for anybody else. I know it's there, but if you didn't know it was there, it's not as if somehow your Foursquare experience is diminished. So it seems like they are working on just a lot of different angles behind the scenes. It's not just a check-in service anymore. It's a place to get recommendations about restaurants and shops and to find out what's cool nearby you type of a thing. So if they're going to get into more of a television slash, I guess, Hollywood space, I can see that working. If I was somebody like GetGlue, I would be a little perturbed about the idea. Just because Foursquare kind of has that brand recognition that none of these other apps really have, because it was one of the first.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they do have to evolve too, Sarah. I mean, one thing I noticed, and I don't know if our listeners feel the same way, but anytime I mention Foursquare to someone who does not know about Foursquare, and I explain the concept of the check-in, right? I feel like people understand the Facebook updates, they understand Twitter, they understand many of the social networking tools, but when I say you're going to check in at a location, most people's reaction is worse than anything I've ever heard about any social network in terms of why would I want to do that and what would be the benefits. I mean, clearly we get it, but I think that you're right, that that simplicity of Foursquare of just kind of checking in and telling people, that's just not going to fly with everyone. They need more than that, right?
Yeah.
They need more.
Yes. Well, Foursquare, we hope you enjoy your new agency. It's UTA, by the way. That's United Talent. Is that right? Anyway, it's a big agency, so... They're definitely big time now. Let's move on to our social tip of the week.
All right. So this is a really simple social tip and something you may want to do if you don't like the way that some of your posts show up on Facebook and your images show up on Facebook. This quick little app allows you to turn your Facebook posts into a Pinterest-like board. So basically, it's not going out to Pinterest, but this app called PinView will take all of that information and present it in a Pinterest layout, which is so common. Many people have copied it. And now you can have that same layout within the Facebook environment. I actually think, you know, it kind of works within the Facebook environment, especially if you're not ready to maybe to make the leap and start using Pinterest, but you like the look and feel of the design. This allows you, again, to do this right within your Facebook page and looks pretty slick.
Yeah, I think it looks great. In fact, I think it looks better than the organic Facebook experience, actually. That's PinView with one word. You know, it's Amber, the talk that I gave last week in Idaho, you know, we're sitting in a good-sized room. I don't know how many people were in the room, but it was enough to get a pretty good sample of, like, okay, who's got a Facebook account, who's got a Google Plus account, that sort of thing. And I deliberately did not mention Pinterest until we had talked about a lot of other things. And I swear, it's like half of the people in the room perked right up. As soon as I said the word Pinterest, it was like, oh, yeah, Pinterest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're on Pinterest.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And it was such a good real-world... I don't know, maybe wake-up calls for some of it like me, where it's like people are on Pinterest. Everybody's got a Pinterest account, and they're excited about it. And not necessarily that the thing is that, you know, I was giving a presentation to some people who were varying degrees of technical expertise or even interest. And a lot of the folks in the room who didn't even maybe even have a Twitter account yet knew exactly what Pinterest was and were ready to talk about it.
It's so funny. I was speaking at an event with some investment bankers, and it was a mostly male audience, a little bit older, maybe around 50 as far as the average age. And I asked if anyone had heard about Pinterest, and it was a very small group. And literally, there was one man in the back who raised his hand. He's like, oh, my daughter loves Pinterest, you know, and he was so excited. And it reminds me of speaking in maybe, you know, the late part of 2007 when I would mention Twitter and there'd be that one person and you could see the enthusiasm. They were so excited that they actually knew about that service and they knew that it was creating a lot of buzz. So, not going away anytime soon, nor are the people who are copying the design of Pinterest. The copycats never end.
So PinView, obviously totally free. If you're on Facebook quite a bit already, as we are, some of us anyway, it seems like, you know, give it a try. You might like it. I think it looks great. It looks a lot like Pinterest. So whether you Pinterest or maybe you don't necessarily need to join Pinterest, but maybe want to feel like you're participating, you can make Facebook act like Pinterest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure Pinterest loves it. Maybe
sure,
not.
I'm sure they do, yeah. Moving on to our spotlight of the week, and this is, location-based stuff. It's, you can't get away from it. There are so many competitors, really, in the check-in tip space. Foursquare is one of them, actually. But there are other apps that are a little bit more of, here's a picture, here's the location of the picture, here's maybe a tip of, you know, what you might get out of a trip to the Golden Gate Bridge based on what I did when I went to the Golden Gate Bridge. And the latest one is called Dabble. Their website is dabble.it, like dabble it. But I went ahead and downloaded it because I had seen it written up, I think, on the Next Web. And it's actually an iPhone app, but you can use it on your iPad just fine. And I thought, okay, well, you know, I'm always interested in the next big thing. So what's the deal? Well, I'm only connected to one person, my friend Eddie Codell, because it asked me to connect with all my Facebook friends who are using Dabble, and he is the only one. But I could go ahead and invite friends or find people other ways. And for the most part, without me having added anything, I see that Eddie was in Justin Herman Plaza. He took a picture of something. I can go ahead and like that. Outdoor food vendors are popular with the downtown lunch crowd. That's at the Ferry Building in San Francisco. Very true. So, I mean, this stuff isn't necessarily all that compelling for me because I live in San Francisco. But if I was to be in San Francisco for the first time, let's say, I could open up this app and get ideas about what to do, maybe where to eat, those sorts of things, based on where I'm physically located. You can search via places. Or, of course, I could add tips of my own. If I wanted to, you know, take a photo of something nice. I went to a brunch place, for example, yesterday for the first time. I'd never been there before. And I had a great crepe. I'd love to tell people, hey, you should get this. Here's a picture of it, that sort of thing. But, so that's Dabble. And it's awesome. It's free. And, yeah, they've got a nice little tutorial video on their website that gives you a good sense of how it works. But, Amber, I mean, I don't even know... I just don't know if it's enough because I feel like this is all very familiar.
Mm-hmm. So, I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah. It's just it's a very common thing for an app to want to own the space. But if they keep making them, then it's going to keep diluting the space.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of Path. Maybe it's just the design, some parts of the design of it. I mean, not entirely, but yeah, there are tons of services like this out there. And I don't know. I mean, it seems like you have to kind of do something a little bit different to kind of catch on. I mean, we've seen that with many other apps in the past that you have to have, a catch. Like, look at Instagram, right? You know, the thing was the cool filters and they were free and it made it really simple. And that was kind of a new thing. I mean, I think they opened up that whole category of filters and spawned many apps that did the same thing. But you're right. I don't know if this is different enough.
Yeah. And sometimes companies like this, if I spend a lot of time and effort providing them data which makes their network better, it's like I almost want some sort of a, I know that they can't give me a guarantee that they'll, you know, be wildly successful, but I had this issue with Oink, which is the app that Milk put together before they decided to shut down, and then some of the Milk team went to work at Google. And the problem with Oink, and they allowed you to export all of your data, so you know, all the pictures that I had put into Oink and, you know, the reviews associated with them, I could get back. But, I mean, I spent a lot of time reviewing pretty much everything I ever bought as far as food goes. And, you know, because I wanted the community to grow and their database to grow. And it was really disappointing to me when that went away. And to this day, it's like, I'll be, you know, at the crepe place and I'll be like, Oink would have been perfect. Because it was like specifically targeted to, you know, rate something. And so when I see companies like this, I go, great, but how long are you going to be around? Because I just don't want to, it's hard to put a lot of effort into something that's not going to be around for very long because there are too many of them.
Yeah, I totally agree. Is there a story in terms of why Oink? I mean, I think I read some articles, but nothing specific about why they kind of went away. I guess it's because the team totally moved to Google and they had to shut it down. Is that part of it?
You know, I wish I knew. I still don't exactly know why. I don't really know what came first, I guess, as far as that Milk deal. It seems like, you know, Oink was a good product. I know that they didn't have the user engagement that they wanted, but it... I just don't know, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know the reason. But I know that Kevin Rose, Daniel Burka, and a couple other people, I think there were four of them, are now working at Google full time. I still don't even know what they're working on. I figure, I'm not going to dig like, you know, some sort of investigative reporter. It's like, you guys...
dig.
That was actually... I didn't do that on purpose. It just happened. No pun intended, but I figure once they go public with whatever they're working on, we'll make Kevin come back on the Social Hour and tell us all about it.
And we'll ask him about Oink then, Sarah.
That's right. We will.
We'll get the full story.
We'll say what really happened.
Watch out.
Who hates who? All right, let's move on to some of our viewer feedback. Quick reminder that you can call us, 2626-SOCIAL. That's our Google Voice number. Just type out social in number form. I don't actually know it by heart, but that's 2626 social. The social hour at twit.tv is how you can email us, or you can always send us a tweet and hashtag it social hour. We'll try our best to make sure that we're filtering tweets to bring more tweets into our conversation each week. But let's start with a voicemail from somebody who isn't really sure that Yelp is enough of a democracy.
Hey, Amber and Sarah. I've been a fan of Yelp for many years, and I just recently noticed that they started filtering results, and it seems kind of skewed towards the merchants, and I just don't really see how that's really beneficial to us consumers, and I wanted to get your take on this. I was kind of concerned that looking at a couple of the things that I've placed reviews on, they seem to be skewed more towards the merchant, and just hoping to get your take. Thanks.
Well, I think, Sarah, in to continue with the theme of the show, it is possible maybe that it's all about money. Who knows? But I haven't heard anything about this, to be honest with you, in terms of the way that they're putting out information and prioritizing it. I mean, that's not a good thing, especially if a user feels that way about Yelp, because so many people depend on it for really honest, authentic reviews. I will say I've noticed this a little bit about some other services that are in the review businesses, that it seems as though I just feel like they've lost their authenticity a little bit. Maybe they're just too popular, and then all the businesses are on board, and it just loses that really organic kind of community feel to it.
You know, I use Yelp constantly. There's a couple people in chat saying, I don't use Yelp. Who uses Yelp? I do. Absolutely. Then again, Yelp works really well, I think, for someone like me who lives in a place that has a very concentrated, large amount of not just restaurants, because you can rate, doctor's offices and auto dealerships and that sort of thing. But majority, the reason that I use it is for restaurants and cafes and things like that. But and I like to go new places and try out new things. And I don't want to spend time at a cafe that has like the average of 1 star on Yelp, because it's probably horrible. So I really actually use Yelp constantly. And I think what our caller is concerned with is if he writes a review on Yelp, there's 1,992 reviews for Absinthe, which is bar and restaurant that's near my house. It's great. So I'm pretty big fan of it. It's got 4-star average, which is very good. And then you can go, and I'm looking at the app view. So the view on the Yelp experience at yelp.com is a little bit different than this, but it's still the same information. And you can start reading through all the reviews. And what's nice about Yelpers, as they're called, is they are often extremely thorough about why a place gets 4 stars rather than 5, or why it was the best meal that they ever had, or why it was the worst, or anything in between. So it can be I almost actually read Yelp reviews for fun half the time. But you get a really good idea of what this place is like. Now, if you write a review that was maybe a scathing review of Absinthe for some reason, depending on your standing on Yelp, your review might not rise to the top, even if it's the most recent review. So it all kind of has, there's a bit of a how you're rated as a user, because obviously Yelp has to take into consideration that somebody from a competing bar and restaurant could come in here and sign up for a bunch of accounts and say nasty things about Absinthe to try to get their rating down. And obviously that kind of stuff happens. So they do have to work a little bit with which reviews are more highly regarded based on Yelp standing, I guess, in the community. So that definitely has a lot to do with it. But Amber, I think you're right. Obviously, businesses get a lot out of having good relationships with Yelp as well. And there have been some stories, they come out every once in a while, that seem a little fishy. A business has too good of a rating, or somebody who had a bad experience at a business kind of, their comments get a little scrubbed from the Yelp system, and people cry foul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the advice for most of the listeners or viewers of the show is really just to kind of proceed with caution. I mean, I use Yelp, I use a lot of other review and recommendation services, but I tend to maybe combine them with, another service that's similar just to get a more balanced review, I think. So you may want to do a little more homework maybe than just one particular service that's out there. And again, I go back to the point that a lot of businesses are getting really savvy and they're going in there and then they're, you don't know what type of dealings are happening. So just be cautious. But, I think we're all happy that these services are out there. But I find, using more than one can be really helpful.
Yes, totally agreed. There was a commenter in chat who said his wife had left a bad review and the review was deleted entirely. So she went on and decided to write the same review on her personal blog. It now has a high placement in a Google search related to Yelp. So, you gotta make sure that your voice is heard. That's the whole point of services like this is it's not only for good reviews, but it's for bad reviews. In fact, the only two times, I'm a Yelp user, but I don't write a lot of reviews. But the two times that I went ahead and, logged in and wrote a review were because I was so upset after particularly nasty experiences. One was actually at an auto dealership. I don't remember the other one now, because I was like, I've got to tell my story. I am, I am mad as hell, and everyone's going to know about it. I haven't gone in to see if they've deleted my review or not.
Good for you, sir.
Yeah. We got another voicemail from Kyle, who wants to know more about a service called Shopkick.
Hey, Sarah and Amber. This is Kyle from Arkansas. I was just wondering to know what y'all thought of the Shopkick app, where you can walk into a retail store and get points to spend later, and you can even scan items to get points. I'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks.
So, Amber,
this looks really interesting.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, I haven't actually used it. I've never heard of it before now, but I so far it looks kind of cool. I think, Sarah, the only question I would ask is just based on your feedback about making sure things don't go away when newer apps are launched. It sounds like a neat idea, and if you're going to spend a lot of time getting those points, hopefully Shopkick is around for the long run.
Yeah, I have heard Shopkick. The name was sort of familiar to me. When Kyle brought it up, but I hadn't downloaded it either. I went ahead and downloaded it before the show, and it seems pretty cool. Based on where I am right now, obviously I'm in Petaluma. We've got a Kmart that's pretty close by. And for example, I could scan Orbit Peppermint Gum with my camera app, if I was indeed at the store, and I had the barcode right in front of me. And it gives you a little bit of a tutorial on how to properly scan barcodes. And if I do that, even if I don't buy the gum, I guess I get points, credits within the app that I guess eventually if I get enough credits, I get something for free. I mean, I guess that's the way that it would work, or else you wouldn't care about amassing or kicks, I think is what their monetary system is called. So I guess the idea is if Shopkick and Kmart get together and, Orbit Gum for that matter, and say, if you're already holding the gum, you're that much more likely, I guess, to buy a pack of the gum. So everybody just gets a little bit more sales out of the whole thing. It seems like a pretty cool idea, but yeah, I don't know. I don't really have a problem with it. I guess you just have to be somebody who doesn't mind having your mobile device, whether, it's a phone or a tablet even, in a store, scanning things and taking pictures of things and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot of companies are using it so far. Target, Macy's, Best Buy, Crate and Barrel, Old Navy, and the list goes on and on. The scanning stuff and you get points, I feel like that is just opening up a whole opportunity for someone to kind of game the system. And I can only imagine someone going into a store and, just starting to scan a bunch of items to get points. So I question that element. But I think if you, kind of go into a store, if there's something more, even just walking into the store and kind of checking in like you would on a Foursquare, I think that kind of makes sense, but I don't totally get the scanning part of it.
I don't either. I think it's just it's a way for them to track your engagement with brands. So that's sort of where I'm sort of like, do I have a problem with this? Do I like it? Do I not like it? I think it's, hey, I'm always down for coupons and deals. You know, if I can figure out a way to get, you know, $10 off at Best Buy, and it's not that hard for me to do that, I'm definitely going to take advantage of a little money saving here and there. But then it's sort of, it turns into, how much do I really want to interact with brands? Depends on the brand. I was in Best Buy for like 2 hours last week because I am researching home theater systems. And so it's like, I was spending quite a bit of time in Best Buy. You know, I might be inclined to check out and see what Best Buy and Shopkick have put together to try to save me some money. Looks like if I have enough kicks, I could get a Best Buy gift certificate that could go up to as much as $20. Then they've got a nice little test case of someone named Ramiro who had amassed enough points to get a gift certificate that he used on when he bought a new iPad. So I like the idea of that, as long as it doesn't change your natural behavior too much, you know, because it's like, mm-hmm. I'll interact with brands to a point, and then it just feels a little bit silly.
Yeah, I sometimes feel in the retail world like it's almost as though retailers are sort of throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what apps stick, so to speak, in the sense that they're trying out all these different things they don't really know. And again, I worry, like you mentioned before, about that long-term strategy. But I do have a good friend who's a retail expert. He's fantastic. So I'm going to ask him about Shopkick and see what he says about it. I'll tweet him right after the show. So hopefully we'll have an answer from someone who specializes in that field.
Cool. Sounds good. On to our app of the week. Hey, we've never had an app of the week before. This is new.
Yeah, so I was looking for memes of the week or a tweet of the week. I didn't find anything that interesting, but I really wanted to mention this app that I found that's called TwizGrid. I just read about it this morning. Really great for Twitter users, and I know a lot of people who are listening are fond of Twitter. This allows you to display Twitter photos in a really beautiful way. So if you want to scan Twitter for pictures, just images, you can do that and have these really pretty albums. You can also search images based on location. And so I think, you know, for a lot of people, they'll find and discover some really interesting content, especially if you're going traveling and you're going to visit a new city and you want to see what pictures people have taken of that city. I think this makes it kind of fun. Again, totally free, Sarah. So if you don't like it, you don't have to use it, but neat to see, a different way to be able to view Twitter content.
Yeah, I love these free apps. I'll try anything if it helps me absorb Twitter in a different way. And obviously, if it doesn't cost me anything, that's a huge bonus. Because especially with images, and I like the services that will scrape Twitter to give me certain kinds of information, because I'm not going to be able to see all the images when I'm just trying to catch up on Twitter, because I'm reading things and then there's links and I end up missing stuff. So if you were to say, I just want to focus on everything that's visual, image-based, that's being shared in my Twitter stream, TwizGrid seems like a pretty cool way to do it. TwizGrid.
If you can remember the name, because it's taken me a while to say that name properly.
Yeah.
TwizGrid.
I think they're
it's not the prettiest of names.
We're just running out of words. So now even
the
made
problem.
Up words are getting sillier and sillier. But if it's a good service, I can look beyond. I can look beyond it.
All right. So Sarah, I think we're ready for the rad or fad.
Yeah. Let's do it.
I found a weird one this week. I kind of like finding really, sort of strange things for rad or fad, because sometimes with technology, you can't believe what people are dreaming up. This latest one, the headline just kind of struck me as I was browsing the web earlier today. This is a not new product that you can get right now, but it's being researched and developed. It's called a pair of diet goggles. This is a project that's being done at the University of Tokyo, where they are developing goggles that will make your food appear bigger, because they're saying basically when you see a donut, if the donut looks really, really large, you're less inclined to actually eat that donut. Now, my question is, are you going to wear these goggles around everywhere, or how does this work? I have many, many questions, Sarah.
Well, yeah. Okay. So, So if I want to eat a donut, the idea is if it's a little donut, I'll just eat it because I think, oh, it's just a tiny little thing. And if it's like a big monster donut, then either I'll say, too much, too many calories, or maybe I'll only eat half or something. But it's not going to change the way it feels in my hand, right? I mean, are we so visually focused that it would, gosh, I don't know. This whole thing, this is just weird.
It is really weird. I do not think this is so rad because I just can't see the long-term success of this, to be honest with you. The goggles for our listeners, you know, they're not really that attractive. I'm sure they could make them more appealing, but are you really going to wear what many are probably going to call fat goggles? Because let's be honest, you know, diet goggles just may not stick and they may want to sort of make fun of these goggles a little bit more. I think it's got to be a bit of a fad, especially, Sarah, especially. This is a very key point. If you read the article, especially because the goggles are not yet able to identify weird-shaped food like bananas. So they're not perfect, Sarah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, this is, I mean, I cannot imagine this catching on. This seems very, very, very fad to me. It sort of, it kind very of reminds fad. Me of when you set the clocks 5 minutes ahead of what the actual time is in your house because you don't want to be late, which I do because I'm always late. But I know that I did that. I remember that I did that. So when it says it's 10:40, I say, well, it's really only 10:35. So it's like I'm not really tricking myself. I'm supposed to be tricking myself, but it's, you know, psychologically that only works so much. If I'm wearing my fat goggles or my diet goggles, whatever they end up being called, and I'm holding a piece of food that looks huge, I'm going to know it's not really that big, or I'll kind of, you know, do one of these things. So it's like, I don't see this helping anybody. I think it's just sort of technology for technology's sake.
It's just weird. I will say I played around with this app a while ago on App Central, a TV show that I do, and it's called Lose It. And it's a really cool app if you're looking to kind of manage your weight and manage calories coming in and calories going out and your exercise as well. You know, Sarah, as we all know, there really isn't a fast and easy way to lose weight. You should just have to exercise, eat well, and potentially eat less. But so Lose It is a free app that I think has some good stuff built into it if you're trying to manage your health and fitness and weight a little bit better. Maybe you don't need the diet goggles.
Yeah, maybe not. But that was very good fitness and nutrition tips from Amber MacArthur. Thank you very much. We should all be eating a little bit better and moving around a little bit more, myself included. I just need to stop eating pizza every night, pretty much. That's not going to get me anywhere.
It's so good, though, Sarah.
It's so good. I know. The taste wins too often.
Mm-hmm.
But that
good.
Actually comes to the end of our hour. In fact, I think we're over just a tiny bit. So thanks to everybody who stuck with us. We're at the social hour plus a few minutes here and there. But this was a really fun show. And Amber, I'm glad that you are enjoying the sun and feeling healthy down in Florida because you look tan and I am jealous.
Aww. Yes, it's been awesome. I'll be here actually next week as well, and then I'll be back in Toronto. So, Sarah, I will make sure we get a good guest for next week, unless the lady you mentioned before works out. So it should be a good show next week.
Okay, awesome. So thanks to everybody for joining us on the Social Hour. Remember that we are live Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Join us live if you can. But if you can't, don't worry. You can never miss a show. twit.tv/TSH is where all of our episodes live, all of our show archives, all of our show notes, everything that we talk about is there, along with handy subscription links so that you can get our show delivered to you without even thinking about it each week. Thanks to everybody for watching. Until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. We'll see you soon.
Bye, guys.